Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of In Conversation With, the podcast from the Devon Chamber of Commerce. My name is Paul Fieldpot. I'm the Vice Chair of Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and also Director of the overall Devon branch, so to speak. Now, we continue our interviews with some of our Devon-based MPs. We've already spoken to Luke Pollard, to Caroline Vodan, to Steve Darling, to Fred Thomas, and now we welcome the absolute, I'm going to describe her as glamorous, Rachel Gilmore MP. Hello, Rachel. Welcome to the studio. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
I know from this you're going to do something for telly, aren't you? Which is probably...
But you scrub up all right.
As they say, yes, you do scrub up all right. So you were elected as MP for Tiverton and Minehead just over a year ago. How has that journey been? What's been the biggest shock to MP life?
I don't think I was shocked by anything because, for goodness sake, it was the fourth time I stood. And I used to work for Nick Harvey MP, who was long-term MP for North Devon. So there weren't any shocks. I mean, I think the most difficult time was getting elected at 4:30 on the 5th of July, going up to London on the Sunday, and they give you a computer, and then you're on your own because it takes you 4 or 5 months to recruit staff. So I was very conscious that I wanted to be very accessible and I wanted to reply to my constituents as soon as I could. So for the first 4 months, I was doing at least 2 all-nighters a week just to try and get through my emails. But then I recruited a fantastic team who were doing the best that they can. And one of the things I always say to my constituents is I'd rather under-promise and over-deliver. And most people are reasonable and expect a reply within 2 or 3 weeks. You get the odd person who thinks that you should reply within 48 or 72 hours, which just isn't practicable. I wish I could do it, but I just can't.
So did you find that 1 minute you had a completely empty inbox, then as soon as you were in position, it just went
I mean, overnight. I mean, not even hour or 2 hours. But I don't blame them. You know, they've got a new MP. I said right at the beginning that I wanted to be accessible. I wanted to work hard for my constituents. Why wouldn't you? And it was a complete change for that, particularly in West Somerset. So, yes, and I'm very conscientious. So I lost a lot of sleep, but people were very understanding.
So how do you get that balance right? Because has it become easier for you to manage now? Because pulling all-nighters, that's going to take its toll, isn't it, really?
Yeah. By the time I went on holiday at the end of August last year, I was absolutely exhausted. I can remember we went to Albania and I got on the boat from Corfu to Albania, and you sort of think you should be sitting there, and I just slept. But it was worth it. Now I've got my fantastic team. So I've got 4 or 5 caseworkers now. I've got my fantastic comms guy, Chris Coop, Rhys, my chief of staff, and we're just recruiting for an office manager. And of course, I mustn't forget Alex, who's my researcher in London. Very dapper, Mr. Chowdhury.
Nice. So where you're located then, you're right up on the Somerset and Devon border. We're quite unique when it comes to borders in this country, aren't we? It's almost like a them and us you can sometimes find. Does where you're located, Somerset, Devon, does that give you a bit of an insider's perspective with regards to both sides of what happens
in
that area?
Yeah, and I'm lucky because I was brought up in Wellington, which is pretty close to the Devon border, and then in Bradford-on-Tone. Actually, my constituency boundary comes up to the bridge in Bradford-on-Tone, so I'm very lucky that I know that area particularly well. And of course, I worked for Taunton Deane Borough Council as their PR person. I've been a district councillor twice. I've worked on the Somerset side. Most of my Somerset councillors I've known for a long, long time. And the same with my Devon councillors. I mean, I've been around for a long time.
So to speak. It's actually quite a challenging area to service. I know as a chamber, we find Devon logistically quite a challenging place to get, you know, from top to bottom, left to right. You know, it can take you a long time. Do you experience the same challenges as an MP having to get around?
Well, yes. I mean, I know that I have to take longer to plan a trip if it's in the holiday season, because the chances are I'll be stuck behind caravans. Not that I've got anything against caravans, because they come to my constituency and spend their money. So carry on, chaps. Or behind a tractor. It's just one of those things that, knowing the area like the back of my hand, I know all the shortcuts. I didn't have to use a sat-nav at all during the campaign, but it is a massive constituency. It's a very, very beautiful constituency, but it's also got its own challenges, and social deprivation is a real, real issue.
Now, I do like meeting MPs that have actually had a really good, interesting background professionally. You know, they haven't been career politicians. They've actually done, I'm going to probably upset a few here, done real work. So you've got quite a fascinating career in communications from the NFU to the Environment Agency and beyond that. So what lessons have you learnt from that career life that you've been able to bring to Parliament?
I think communicating with people is really important. Mm. And I'm a great believer in face-to-face communications. I think you need to see the whites of people's eye and they need to see you. And it's all about body language and whether they can trust you. And so one of the reasons I won in July last year, and many people thought it was against the odds, was that my amazing team and I knocked on 31,000 doors between September 2023 and July 2024.
Physically,
yeah. So I lost lots of weight, which was good.
But I also probably a few layers of skin.
Yes. I met a lot of my constituents. And of course, if you knock on one person's door, if they're going out for supper or going to the pub the following night, the chances are they're going to say, guess who knocked on my door? Mm. And I think that was a very good experience. And I think it was the sort of thing that anybody who wants to be a member of parliament should be prepared to put in that really, really hard groundwork. And of course, my background in communications means that I can understand what's important to people. Mm. And I never take anything for granted. So I don't make any assumptions about what people want or what people think. I need to hear it from them. And I was interviewed on Radio Somerset after winning. And the question was, you know, what's your top priority? And I could have reeled off loads of things, education, NHS, transport, farming. But I said, it's just to be accessible. My constituents need to know that they can seek me out. They can come to the 10 surgeries I hold a month. They can come up and talk to me in the street, which I love. If they see me having a cup of coffee, I don't mind if they come over and ask me a question. You know, that's why I did it. I love people. I love my constituency. I'm a hard worker and a straight talker.
That's really good to hear. On the topic of communications, I think, would I be right in saying that governments, regardless of which government is in power, but governments generally, they're not that good at communicating,
no,
are they? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's because with the civil service, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, we need a civil service. Mm. I think there are such levels of bureaucracy and silos that they don't actually get down to the nitty-gritty. So they'll make assumptions, they'll do some research. I'm on the Public Accounts Committee, which is probably the most influential committee at the House of Commons. And every time we do an investigation into whatever the subject is, we find that there's two things that they lack, whether it's dentists, prisons, civil courts, local buses. They always lack data, which is basic information, and they lack strategy. And you can't have a strategy unless you have the data. And it's really obvious that that's something that the civil service and therefore governments of whichever complexion will suffer with.
Do you think that will ever change or is it just the nature of the
business? I don't know.
The construct of how it works?
I think it is beginning to dawn on the senior civil servants that they are a bit out of touch because there have been so many mismatches in policy and expenditure where things have gone drastically wrong. I mean, I can use, you know, the dental contract as a reason. So we have these awful dental deserts. I have to say, I do approve of the Labour Party policy or the Labour government policy to sift out the dead wood at the top of the civil service. I think there's been too much emphasis on trying to reach an amber light rather than a green light. And that sort of complacency and a reminder of the fact that they are accountable to the taxpayer. They're not accountable to the minister. They're not accountable to their boss. They're accountable to the taxpayer.
And I can imagine from someone who's come from quite a decent, not necessarily corporate, but a decent background in business, you must find that very frustrating when departments don't think they're accountable. Because in business, we all have to be accountable.
Well, it's the bottom line. Mm. And I don't see why that concept of a commercial context, because it is business. Government is in the business of making things better for the country and being cost effective and caring and compassionate and all those things. But I think there is sometimes they take their ball off commercial ways of doing things.
Yeah. So obviously you understand how business works, in particular the area of agriculture. You've got deep roots in the agricultural sector and you serve as vice chair of the AP, that's the All Party Parliamentary Group on farming. Went a bit.
And I've just been made the vice chair of the CLA Rural Powerhouse. Uh-huh. APPG as well. So I'm really there, which is where I want to be.
So what do you find most engaging about doing that?
Well, I care passionately about my farmers, as I call them. I've got a background in agricultural policy, which is really useful because that is effectively what we're talking about and what the government is very keen to change. I'm very concerned about the inheritance tax changes. Mm. I'm very concerned about the family farm small business changes. I don't think they've done any impact assessments. I don't mean to patronise them, but I think they haven't probably really dug down into what's really happening in small family farms. I mean, my constituency, your average size farm is probably going to be somewhere between 200 and 250 acres, and they are family farms. Hmm. And the idea that they're only worth £1 million, I don't know where they've pulled that number from. So during the budget, I was horrified. I was sitting on the green benches, and when they made that announcement, I was absolutely horrified. And I slipped out, probably to go to the loo, and I bumped into Stephen Timms, who I've known for many years, and I said to him, "You've just screwed over my farmers." And I immediately wrote a briefing for the 59 Labour MPs who have rural constituencies with majorities of less than 4,000. And I sent them, it was a briefing that I pulled together with one of my farmers, Guy, Thomas Everard, and I said to them, "This is what's going to happen. This is the lie of land. This is the reality." And I wasn't whinging, because what I've always said to my farmers or the members of the NFU when I was working there was, don't go in as a special case. Present yourself as business people, because you are running a business. Mm. Just happens Absolutely. To be an agricultural business.
Mm. We're apolitical at the chamber, but let's say there's a disconnect there. Why do you think that's come about?
I think that farmers have been fed messages mm-hmm. by some of their trade bodies, which always puts them at the bottom of the pile. And I don't think they've done them any favours in that respect. Don't permanently see yourself as victims. See yourself as somebody who's looking to make a profit rather than break even, because that's what a businessman would do. Hold your head high. Talk about the great things that you do, not just for the environment and for agriculture and for food production. But, you know, when I was at the NFU, I did lots of market research. 91% of farmers will be church wardens, school governors. You know, they're embedded, I hate that word, but they are embedded in our rural communities. And the rural communities just wouldn't function if they weren't there. We wouldn't have the landscapes we've got.
Yeah. But some of those points, they're points that actually make up quite transferable advice to anyone that runs a small business. You know, farmers aren't the biggest of businesses. They're SMEs and indeed micro businesses, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So many of our listeners are small business owners, entrepreneurs, one person bands all the way up to, we've got some big ones as well, obviously. So what's the single biggest thing that you think that government could do right now in order to help the small business environment? What would you do?
Well, I think they need to revisit the national insurance increases for employers. I just can't get my head around the idea that, you know, small businesses in this country bring in billions and billions of pounds, and it's as if they're unseen and unheard. And to put that extra tax upon them when ultimately you're looking for growth seems to me to be a complete contradiction. And it's not just the national insurance, it's the hike in the minimum wage, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I think, you know, if you're paying people badly and you say you're in business, you're not in business. You're in the business of, you know, or taking people for granted.
Your people are your biggest asset.
Exactly. And your best Paddy asset. Ashdown once said that. But also the hike in energy prices, the hike in food prices, the general state of the cost of living isn't helping small businesses across the country. And going back to your comment previously about Devon being a very, very big county, you know, the cost of fuel, the cost of heating, because it's pretty cold on Exmoor, the cost of being able to function, to use the machines that you need to make yourself successful, whether you are, you know, a small business or a farmer, is something that I think they haven't taken account of. And again, you know, talking about data and strategy, where are the impact assessments on everything this government, and I'm not massively anti-Labour, you know, I'm relatively on the left of my party, but I just don't understand that having had 14 years to prepare, why didn't they do impact assessments so they could then actually see where there was potential to bring money into the coffers and where an idea would actually backfire?
Yes, I think, again, it's just thinking about scenarios that you see time and time again, regardless, again, of who's actually in government. I often ask myself the question, Have they modelled this?
Yeah, well, it's the same thing.
Yeah, before we make a decision as a business, we will model the impact, as you say, the impact statements and analysis. And you just sometimes think that decisions are made very, very quickly. I hate to think that they're just made based on votes and to get votes and all that kind of stuff, or knee-jerk reactions. When you're taking on the role that you have within the Public Accounts Committee, for example, you're one of the people that needs to point the finger and
oh, yeah.
I can see you look at the smile in your face.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yes, you want to get to the bottom of something.
Yeah.
I already know now that I wouldn't want to pick an argument with you with regards to anything like that. Do you enjoy that? What's your strategy there?
Oh, it's not my strategy. I don't have a strategy. You know, the Public Accounts Committee, as I said, is probably the most influential committee in Parliament, and it's very well chaired by Sir Geoffrey Clifton Brown, who I've known for many years. He's a real gentleman, but quite really, you know, iron fist, velvet glove. And we get very, very well briefed by the National Audit Office. We have some very, very trenchant questions. And we have the opportunity, if one of the civil servants or one of the witnesses says something and goes slightly off-piste, we can go back and pick them up. And I'm pleased that I have made some civil servants and some people from the public and private sector feel deeply uncomfortable because of that issue about accountability. You cannot come to the Public Accounts Committee and expect to push stuff under the carpet.
Mm.
And it is our job collectively, there's people from all parties on the committee, and we do work as a team. It's not a political committee. We do work very well together to unpick the truth from the sort of rather fuzzy, bureaucratic Sir Humphrey speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's protecting the public purse and striving for standards.
And accountability and transparency.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, politics, it can be an intense business. It says here, well, that's probably an understatement on this script in front of me. So when things get heated either in Westminster or on, dare I say it, social media, how do you switch off and stay grounded? How do you stop it from getting to you?
I don't read my social media. I don't even have access to my social media. And I learned that many years ago from the second or third time I stood for Parliament. People are not their best when they come on social media. And one has to remember that the people that aren't saying anything are the people that are probably the ones that are appreciative. And people's expectations sometimes are just wholly ridiculous, or they just put stuff down that just simply isn't true. So I don't look at my social media. In terms of Parliament, I really believe in debate. And that's what it's all about. And politics is the art of the grey. If you go into politics saying, I can do this and I can do that, and it's black and white, either you're not going to win or you're not going to succeed. And that's why that mantra that I mentioned earlier, I'd rather under-promise and over-deliver, is so important. So I love a good debate. I'm always very polite in the chamber. I tend to make relatively short speeches, because I think it's more important to make a good point quickly than a bad point over a long time. I think I've got respect across the chamber. People certainly seem to listen to me. And I do a lot of research for my speeches, so I can use facts and statistics and data.
How do you handle disagreements?
When I'm really, really, really angry, I become very, very calm. And I don't scream, I don't shout. I will just make my point. But I have to be really, really angry to be like that. And I don't get very angry very often because I'm doing my dream job. And I knew there were going to be challenges and I knew there were going to be difficulties. And you can't please all of the people at the end of the day. But my conscience is clear. I work extremely hard. I love spending time with my constituents. I love the things that one finds out as a constituency MP, which sometimes are absolutely obscure and bizarre, but nevertheless fascinating. Yeah, so I've got no reason to get angry.
Yeah. What's one of the most strange things you've come across?
Oh, I don't think it's strange. I think it's a bit sad. Westminster is like going back to school, and they've got all these weird little rules. I mean, I can see the point of some of them, but they've got some of these archaic rules, and it's almost like a form of control. And you think, hang on a minute, we're all adults. We're all here because we're passionate about politics and we're passionate about our communities. Why do you have these silly little things to trip people up? And sometimes one can feel literally like a schoolgirl. I've been naughty. Oh, really?
Yeah. I think as a viewer, when you're watching a debate and activities happen in the House of Parliament and you're seeing the palaver and the traditions that everyone has to go through on screen, you sometimes think, crumbs, how do they actually get anything done? You must do a lot of standing up and sitting down and standing up.
Oh, we do a lot of...
Honestly, it looks rather strange to me.
Yeah, it is. But tradition is not necessarily a bad thing. Mm. So I think the respect that you have to use in the chamber is very important. And bobbing up and down to make sure that you get called by the speaker or one of the deputy speakers. I don't mind any of that. It's just silly little things. So I had to go and give a message to a doorman. And I walked the wrong way through a corridor. And I won't tell you which party they came from, but you can guess. All men said, you shouldn't do that. And I said, well, I need to go and talk to the doorman. And this is the quickest way I can do it. And I've got an important message. And you just think, really, aren't there bigger things on your mind? We've got Gaza, we've got Ukraine, we've got the economy in a mess, we've got the NHS that needs sorting out, we've got SEND, which hasn't got enough provision and families are on their knees. Really? Why are you even thinking about telling a new MP that she went the wrong way down a corridor?
Mm-hmm. It's crazy, isn't it? I can see how that would be very
frustrating. And I'm a natural rule breaker, so.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with that. See, your father was an England rugby international.
Yes.
And you've got quite a unique rugby claim to fame. I'd like to know what that claim to fame is, if I may. And then I've been asked to ask you the question. This isn't my question. This
okay,
is
I don't mind.
Martin.
I don't mind. So when I went to university in London, my godfather was in charge of running the bar at Harlequin's. So absolute dream job. You've come out of an all-girls school and you have to work behind the bar at Harlequin's, and all these hunky rugby players used to come in. They'd opened up Harlequin's club membership to women. So I joined, only to find that Dennis Thatcher had signed his wife up before me, because Dennis and David Frost used to come to Harlequin's to watch the matches and then always drink a considerable amount of electric soup in the members' bar. So I became, I believe, the second woman to join Harlequin's after Margaret Thatcher, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. On a more local note, you've obviously spoken about improving skills and improving the opportunities for everyone across the West Country. So with regards to young people in our region, what are your thoughts on the challenges and areas that improvements need to make for them?
Well, one of the shocking facts about my constituency, which, as I said, is enormous, is that we have, to say a dearth of sixth form provision would be not a correct reflection. So West Somerset Community College has a few sixth form classes and they do a very, very good job. But financial reasons, they've had to cut all the vocational courses there. And without West Somerset Community College, I do not have a sixth form facility in my constituency, which means that children from Tiverton, Ufcombe, Wiverliscombe, Minehead, Bishop's Lydiard, Cotford St Luke, all these relatively large towns or villages, they have to get buses or trains to either Exeter, Taunton or Bridgewater. And guess what? The transport network is also hopeless. So one of the things I'd really, really love to do, and I am working on this with other MPs, I would really love there to be a sixth form facility created for my sixth formers, but for sixth formers from other parts of Devon in my constituency of Tiverton and Minehead.
Yeah, because as we've said earlier, I mean, I'm pleased you mentioned about the challenges we have with regards to transport and public transport in the region, because it just adds to the difficulty, doesn't it?
Well, it makes life impossible for people. I had a really lovely chap, I won't embarrass him and mention his name, but he was in the fifth form at West Somerset Community College. And he came to do a week's work experience with me. And when I said to him, where are you going to do your A-levels? He said, well, I'm going to stay at West Somerset Community College because I live in Minehead and I can get there. I can't take the risk, he said, of going to do A-levels in Taunton at Richard Hewish, because all it would take is for the bus not to turn up one morning. And if I had an A-level exam, bang, that's my opportunity to go to university gone.
Mm.
And that, putting it in perspective,
it's heartbreaking, yeah,
and then you've got the issues that the elder people have about trying to get to Busgrove Park Hospital. My constituency problems, they're like a ball of string. You can't just pull out one end and all the other problems solve themselves. You could pull out, you know, so I've got transport, I've got a lack of dentists, I've got a lack of GPs in Minehead, difficulty recruiting teachers, local transport issues, educational special needs, education, the health service, you know, and it's all part of the same picture. And in terms of West Somerset, on the social mobility scale, it's 324th out of 324. in the entire country. And I suspect that Tiverton isn't that far behind. And that's for a host of reasons. And I am desperate to make lives for all my constituents, whether they voted for me or they didn't, to try and do my best as their representative at the House of Commons to use the information that they give me locally and use it to debate and make speeches and see ministers to help to change their lives.
That's really good to hear, really good to hear. And it's clear that your aim at being approachable and accessible is genuine and really true to heart. Earlier on, you mentioned something I found it quite interesting about the chap who spent time with you doing work experience. What would he have learned, do you think, being with you as a work experience placement?
I think he was very much welcomed into the team. So he learned to work as part of a team. It took us a couple of days to work out that he actually had quite big ambitions. He wants to read PPE, hopefully at Oxford. And I hope that the few days he spent with us sort of opened his eyes up into how he could get there, how he could get some very basic skills working in a politician's office. He's coming back next year. But it took him 3 hours to get to my office in Tiverton and back from Minehead.
Crazy.
You know, so he's getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, I think the three words I use most in my constituency are aspiration, ambition, and hope. Because without those three things, you're stuffed.
Yeah, very true. You've had quite a journey from Cheltenham Ladies College to law, literature, and lecturing. If your 17-year-old self could see you now, what do you think she would say?
About bloody time, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you think she'd be happy, obviously? What critiques would she make?
Oh, she'd probably tell me I'm too fat. No, I am
you
really...
You can't be with all that sitting up and standing down.
It's just having four children. The funny thing about me is that I've got a really good sense of humour and I can seem to take things in quite a blasé manner. But within me, I'm a really conscientious person. And when I set myself a task, I do it. And it might have taken me 43 years since I was 17. But on July the 5th at 4:30 in the morning last year, I did it 4 months before my 60th birthday. And it gives me a real sense of achievement. It gives me a real sense of pride in the people that have supported me, particularly my grandmothers and my mother. And it gives me a real sense of satisfaction as I hit 61 on Monday.
You look absolutely fantastic. The last question that I've got to ask, again, is one that my producer said, you really have to put this one forward. You've obviously mentioned your rugby legacy and sharing a birthday with Margaret Thatcher. So if you had to choose between the two, who would you prefer a scrum with, the Iron Lady or Paddy Ashdown?
Paddy Ashdown every time because he was much more intellectually capable.
Ooh, my word. Rachel Gilmore, MP, thank you very much for joining us in conversation with. And at the time of recording, you're approaching your birthday. Many happy returns.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, helping with all your business and personal taxation needs. Westcott's, we're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.